You're now listening to The Great Greeks Podcast, hosted by Ilias Kosmidis and Paparazzi, also known as John Papas.
Welcome, my friends, back to The Great Greeks Podcast. My name is Ilias Kosmidis, and I'm with Anthony Orisis, all the way from New York at the moment, USA, right?
That's right. I'm in Astoria with the rest of the Greeks, so that is where I'm going from.
The go-to spot for Greeks in New York, right? I've heard of that place.
Yeah, that's the one.
So it's a pleasure to have you on, Anthony. I've been meaning to reach out to you for a while, and I reckon I timed it perfectly because a few things have happened with yourself lately from what I can tell online and with your business. We'll get into that. First of all, let's just say that we met where? Probably on Clubhouse, right? That's the first place we met. Is that accurate?
That is accurate, yes. We are Clubhouse friends. And now we're real-life friends.
We haven't met in person, but that'll happen one day as well. Whether you come to Australia or I come to the USA, it's going to happen at some point.
It's going to happen.
So basically, I just wanted to ask you, like we always ask all our guests, Anthony, what part of Greece you're from, just so we can trace it back to the old country and, you know, get that image in our mind about, you know, because Greece is such a varied country where depending on what part of Greece you're from, it's almost like, I mean, this is a bit, it's not always the case, but, you know, depending on what part of Greece you're from, there is a certain culture, there's a certain influence. So we always like to ask these questions just to get the ball rolling.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I'll start off by saying, Ilya, it's really a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much. You've done an outstanding job with this show. And really, I'm a fan and pleasure to be here, really. I am from Chios, 100% on both sides.
Oh, wow. Okay. Excellent. I know quite a few Chiotes, friends of mine, close friends of mine here in Australia, actually. I've never been, but one day we'll go. We'll try some mastika. Yeah.
Oh, you know your stuff. Yeah. And I would say it's funny that you said, you mentioned you know a few Chiotes. If you speak to anyone from New York, like John, for example, ask him how many Chiotes he knows, he's gonna be like, oh, they're everywhere. I always say like one in six Greeks you meet in, you know, the New York City area seems to be from Chios. So there's a lot of us here.
Awesome. Is there like a Chiotico club there?
Ironically, there is a Chiotico Spiti, which I was actually at last week, and I can't say I go there routinely. They just happen to have their annual party. Was last week, and honestly, it was a great turnout, great party. And my papu was very heavily involved with the Chiotico Spiti and other Chiotico organizations. He was also the dean at a very well-known church in New York, in Astoria, St. Demetrios, and he was the dean there for 40 years. So anyone that grew up from a certain time period in New York City knew my papu. I know he was tough, so for better or worse, they knew my papu as a very passionate Greek teacher. Yeah. But he was very involved with all things here. So I've been going to these things my entire life.
Your papu sounds like a traditional old school Greek man, which, you know, we all look up to those papus, don't we? Yeah.
He was my role models. I love him.
Shout out to Anthony's papu. Is his name Anthony as well? Did you get your name from that side? No.
No, I got it from my other papu. So that's my papu Costa, Costas Parthenis. And then on my father's side, I got the name Andoni from him. And my papu Andoni, I never met. So he actually came to America in, I want to say it was 1914. So I actually went to Ellis Island. And I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Hitch. Does that ring a bell?
Yes, with Will Smith. Yeah.
Yes, that's the one. And I want to say Eva Mendes, I want to say as well. Mm-hmm. There's one scene where they go to Ellis Island and they find, I believe it's her grandmother. And when, you know, she came to America, basically found her name in the database and whatnot. So I actually did that myself a few years ago. It's funny because New Yorkers are like, oh, like people outside of New York are like, oh, do you go to the Statue of Liberty a lot and the Empire State Building? I'm like, no, I've been once, twice to the Empire State Building, right? And then with Ellis Island, I'd been there one time, but I made it a point because I really wanted to see if I could find my papu's name. And I did. And it's a very touching moment to see your papu's name there coming over to America straight from Chios as a 13-year-old and seeing the ship that he took, you know, across the ocean. And I have that framed over basically where my staircase is. So every time I walk down the stairs, I always make it a point to touch it. And I always do my cross. I always just give thanks for the sacrifices that were made for generations prior for me to be here, to have this opportunity to do things like this, you know, and to be an entrepreneur and really live out my dreams. It didn't come without sacrifices, and I'm forever grateful for them.
That's so awesome, Anthony. Really, it's touching because sometimes we do forget these things, and it's always important to remember that, you know, where we are and what we've achieved in life is a combination of all, you know, previous generations as well, sacrifices. You know, some of these people went through wars, for goodness sake. So we can't forget those sacrifices. I totally agree with you. How did you get? Is it like a ancestry database that you had access to there online, or is it somewhere you went physically?
Yeah, so this was actually on Ellis Island. There is a database. You go up to the database, you punch in the name, and then you see names pop up. And for me, having seen my papu's name there, just kind of gave me this incredible feeling. Almost, it's like a feeling of shock, and also you get like almost like numb and tingly. You're like, I cannot believe that I'm really tracing my origins into the United States, and this was step one. And I always look at that, and I'm like, you know, everyone that got here from my family did a lot to be here, to survive here. So I really make it my mission to, want to continue to make them proud.
To understand the logistics of your generational differences here, your grandparents came from Chios to the USA separately, and then your parents met in the US, did they?
That's correct, yeah. So I am from Chios on all sides, as mentioned. But yeah, no, my parents met in Astoria at a christening. So
right, where all magical things happen.
Yeah, that's pretty much. But no, they met in New York.
So New York, born and bred, basically.
That's correct.
Astoria?
Queens. In Astoria. I've lived in Astoria for the last 10 years, but it's always been my home away from home. I had you know, it's funny, Astoria, and like specifically the block that my mom grew up on, it was almost like the Joryo, because that whole block, and not so much anymore because obviously a lot of people have passed away, but I remember growing up, every person on that block was not just from Chios, but from Tholopotami, the Joryo that we're from. So it really was like the Joryo away from the Joryo. It was a very unique upbringing for my mom, and also for me to experience as a young kid to see that. So there was a lot of influence from the old world in a booming metropolitan city. So Astoria is very unique in that sense.
It's I bet it alleviated the feeling of homesickness for your grandparents, your parents as well, I guess, having people from the Joryo there. I've only heard of Astoria, it's like a Greek town, I guess, in New York. And I know that there's, you know, Boston and Chicago, and we've had other guests come on the show, and they've talked about these little Greek towns. We've got some in Melbourne here as well. We've got one called Oakley. But it sounds like the same thing that's happening in most other cities with these Greek towns is happening in New York as well, with Astoria, where it's almost like the need to have that Greek togetherness or that Greek suburb is fading slowly, because when they first came, I imagine they had to have someone they can speak the same language with, share the food with, swap portocalla with and tomates, and that's slowly passing, which is sad in a way. But there seems to be a bit of a resurgence in these Greek towns recently in the last few years, I've noticed. I don't know if that's the case there with Astoria.
So what you're saying is completely accurate. What you're seeing a lot of is, yeah, people are expanding or going to places that have, you know, some more land, and typically in New York City that means moving east, whether that's to Northeast Queens or on Long Island, or if people have a vacation house out in the North Fork, Long Island. There are a ton of Greeks over there. So Greeks typically don't move that far from one another, I've noticed. Here in New York, there's always one pretty close by. So they continue to find new pockets. It's just an upgraded version of what they've been accustomed to and used to.
I've learned a lot about New York from my friend John Pappas, as you know, John.
John's the best.
Yeah, he's a champion. And just hearing the stories about New York, I feel like I've been there. But tell us a little bit about, if you can, your upbringing in New York as a Greek. That's always an interesting story.
As mentioned, born and raised in Queens, New York. The town I was born in, to give context, because when I say this, people are like, oh, I know it. So I was born and raised in Bayside, New York. That's actually where the Wolf of Wall Street was from originally. So when I say that, people are like, oh, I know that town. So yeah. The guy from Wolf of Wall Street was born in the same town. As mentioned, my papu was the dean of St. Demetrios in Astoria. So I always went to Greek events. I went to nursery, Greek school, where he was the principal and the dean. I eventually went to public school. And it's funny, my Greek's pretty good, but it should always be better. But I remember going to kindergarten and not knowing a lot of words in English in public school. And I remember some kid was just like, what are you saying? And I'm like, I didn't know how to translate certain words, but obviously I got used to it real quick. Went to public school for a few years, and then my parents did the switch. And the switch was going from afternoon Greek school, which is tough, to daytime school. I did not want to make the switch. I think I was in third grade. I was very upset about it at the time. But I got to say, it's one of the best things they ever did, because it really tied me in even deeper.
Yeah, just so I understand this, is this you went to after school, Greek school, and then you changed to your normal school being a Greek school, like Monday to Friday?
That's correct. And basically it was a private school. St. Nicholas is the most populated, I think it has the highest population of any Greek members of any Greek church in America. I'm quite certain on that, actually. Okay. And I went to a small, my class was small. It was from third to eighth grade. It was 30 kids, but I gotta say, those 30 kids, like, we grew up like family, and we were very different in many different ways. But even to this day, you see one of them on the street or an event, and there's big hugs. So we really grew up in a very tight-knit environment, while also being able to learn and preserve our culture at the same time. So it was a very unique upbringing in that sense. Yeah. And then from there, I went to the biggest Catholic high school in the country. So I went from 30 kids to, I think it was 800 kids. So that was a culture shock in of itself. But I always got involved, whether it was Goya basketball or doing events with the church. We've always been very close to the community. I really had to attributed to my papu and his presence and his involvement and wanting to be involved, because he gave his life to it, and we wanted to kind of follow in those footsteps and contribute as well.
Just for our non-US based listeners as well, Goya is Greek
Orthodox Youth Association. So right. Basically, it was like, for when you're a kid and you can't go anywhere, they'd have like dances every so often, events, basketball teams, just things to get you involved with the community.
Right. Is that what our friend, I know you're close with him, Tony Cariotti, which I recently met in Greece, actually. He gets involved with the basketball side of, is that what it is, the Goya thing, or is that something else he does?
I would imagine that is Goya, because I know, I believe he's playing Greek church versus another Greek church. So in all likelihood, that would be Goya as well.
That's awesome. So that's like a basketball tournament. They have these tournaments. So I imagine they've got that for soccer as well, or football, as it's known throughout the world.
Yeah, so we didn't have soccer or football team, which was made no sense. There was other avenues for that. I wish they did, but it was just really basketball for whatever reason. I think because our winters here are kind of brutal, and instead of it being, we're able to play year-round basketball.
Yeah, I ask it because, we've got Greek youth communities here in Australia as well, and we're a big country as well, like the US. We don't have the population that the US has, but we don't really have these Greek basketball tournaments specifically to Greeks or anything like that. So that's interesting to hear. Probably because basketball is such a big sport, I guess, in the US as well. Maybe that plays a role. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting to hear the differences. I know that speaking with Thanasi Papulia from Excuse Me, Are You Greek, he was talking about the FDF thing, the folk dance festival thing. That was interesting to hear about as well, because they have like their own tournaments and it's all different communities from different parts of the US, or more, I think, on the West Coast maybe or something, if I understand correctly. But that was interesting to hear as well. I don't think we really have that here. That's what I'm trying to say, I guess.
Yeah, my friend Christina Hedrick of Yamas brand, she's actually there right now. So she's in Sacramento, California, still doing it, still competing and dancing, and she loves it. I've done my mandatory Greek dance classes, but I never went to. Believe me when I tell you it was mandatory.
I could just picture you doing the Kalamatiano around there. A few Hyotika dances. Oh, that's awesome.
our two steps, yeah.
We want to talk about this rare cut thing because it's such a fascinating thing. I want to see where the spark of rare cut begins. You know, where did that all begin? Is it yours, first of all, or is it something that you are working with others on?
No, so this is mine. It's a solopreneurship.
All right.
And at this current stage, you know, obviously I outsource from time to time for certain jobs that need to be done. But no, it's me, and it was a long time in the making.
How long ago did it start?
Yeah, good question. So I want to say I came up with the concept for Rare Cut. I believe it was 2016. And for those who don't know, Rare Cut is my company. It's an apparel brand, and our flagship product is something that I invented and just got a U.S. patent on.
I was going to ask you about that as well.
A couple weeks ago. So
yeah. Congratulations. Amazing.
Thank you. It's honestly, I'm elated. It's a huge step. So what it is I invented a pocket square, or a mandilaki, handkerchief, whatever it may go by to whoever's listening, that has a memory metal in the middle. So no matter how you bend, twist, or fold it, when you put it in your pocket, it stays up. And that's also our tagline, it stays up. So we have fun with our marketing, very tongue-in-cheek. But basically, we took something that previously existed and made an improvement to it. Because I have been in many situations where no one knows how to fold them. They're constantly coming undone. And I've heard many people say, like, I don't even know how to fold this thing. I give up. I'm not wearing these anymore. Yeah. And it's something so simple that why is this so complicated? So that's really what sparked the idea in taking something. And the benefit was, you're not creating a fashion trend that doesn't exist. Like, hey, we're going to wear, or that no one wears. Like, we're going to wear, you know, raccoon hats or something wild that no one's doing. What we're doing is we're taking something that is already a part of men's fashion and just making it easier and encouraging more men to kind of have an option, to be honest, because what we're seeing, at least in, I would think, I shouldn't speak for worldwide, but I should say for at least in America, even at the most conservative events, which is like a Greek wedding or a Greek christening, where everyone dresses to the nines, you're now seeing guys going open collar. And less guys are wearing ties unless they absolutely have to.
Very true.
So for that, I see an opportunity for guys who want to express themselves, have an accessory, and put in a pocket square, which really is a conversation piece and a little emphasis on an outfit, and it really transforms an entire outfit by putting something in so simple, it can transform an entire look.
And I can imagine, especially for Greek men, you know, once the tziftedelia come on, the zebekika, ta kalamatiana, you don't have to worry about it. You can dance to your heart's content on tables, on chairs, and you don't have to worry about it. It's there. You know, you don't even have to look at it. You know it's upright. You know it's sorted. What I really liked, you're talking about the tongue-in-cheek marketing. I came across Christina Mavronis' little thing there where she's the grandma Yeti thing, and she's talking about her son-in-law having problems, yes, you know, keeping it up and all that sort of thing, and then her friend brings out the rare cut. Yeah, that was awesome.
That is one of my favorite skits we've ever done. Christina is a very good friend of mine, and I think she's absolutely hilarious, and she was cool enough to say, hey, you know, I would love to help and make some content for you. And we collaborated and she made that. And honestly, I watch it. I've watched it so many times and I still find it hilarious. So if anyone's wondering what that is, it's literally pinned on our Instagram. So at Rare Cut, it's the first box that's available. We have it pinned because everyone that watches gets a good laugh out of it.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Very well done. Very tongue-in-cheek, as I said, yeah. So tell us a bit about this patent, if you can, because I'm trying to understand now, what have you patented? Is it
the... Yeah, so we have a utility patent. So what that really entails is being able to put a precious metal in between two cloths, and it's very specific. These things typically are. So we had to go back and forth on this process for some time, and they're like, oh, all right, please tell us the... Oh, it's nothing can prepare you for this, like going through it. There's a lot of frustrations, but I was very lucky to have an incredible attorney on my side. Mm. But yeah, they say, hey, can you be more specific on the fabric and the mesh? Can you tell us more about the dimensions and going back and forth? And really what I think played a huge factor is we had a Zoom call with the examiners, and I took the Zoom call in my HQ. So my HQ is my garage in Astoria, which is also my factory for Rare Cut. Mm. And I wanted to just to showcase, like, hey guys, I'm a small business owner and this is a small business. This is a startup as it gets. Mm-hmm. And I'm a guy trying to hustle based off my garage in Queens, trying to make this company happen, and getting this patent would be a game changer. And I talked that talk track because that's the truth of the matter. And at the end, the guy's like, one of the guys was like, Anthony, don't forget, all great companies started out in garages. We love your concept and we think you're going to be great. And I was like, boom.
Turning moment.
Yes, I really think it was. And shortly after, we were granted a patent.
That is so awesome.
A lot of R&D went into this, a lot of time working with several different engineers. So you want to protect your intellectual property. And, you know, I don't know that if I didn't have something that was proprietary, if I would have been as inspired to say, hey, let's roll with this. But the fact that it's never been done before and this is the first of its kind, that is what gave me the extra push and the boost to want to keep pushing forward with this and unveil it to the world, really. So that is having the IP and having the patent changes all that. And I can tell you already, having it only a very short time, we're already getting a lot of calls from people like, hey, do you want to collaborate or can we work with you? So it changes the entire face of a business, especially changing the face of a startup.
Yeah, in the eyes of people outside what you're doing, I imagine it's almost like a justification that it's legitimate and it's something worth investing in, because getting a patent isn't as easy as it might sound to some people.
No, it took years. It took many years. And also the courts were held up because of COVID. Mm. So yeah, I think I came up with the concept in 2016. I think we applied for it in, I want to say, 2017. So it took many, many years. So getting this was, you know, it was just a huge sigh of relief. And just holding the patent in my hand is just it's just a surreal feeling. You know, it's like, all right, it's a long time coming.
Yeah, for sure. Do you get many orders outside of the US?
We do. Most of our orders are US because we offer nice incentives for people who order domestically. We typically run a special of, you know, $2 for $99 and free shipping. We can't offer that same deal of free shipping when it's outside the country.
Of course.
So for that reason, we get most of our orders are domestic. But yeah, no, we get orders from, and we light up. Like I get super pumped up when I see an order that's from anyone, but especially when it's from outside the country, because then I have all these questions like, oh wow, like how they discover us, where did this come from? And I usually include a little note like, hey, please send us a picture from wherever you're at, and we'd love to feature you in the city that you're from, the country you're from. So yeah, it keeps it fun and interesting.
That's amazing. That's awesome, because it seems like it's a product now where, you know, if you want to get a handkerchief for that event, you're not going to go second best. You're going to go get it rare cut. And where can the people get it, by the way? You may as well mention how people can order it online. What's your website there?
Oh, yeah, 100%. So, yeah, our website is rarecut.com.
Easy. Beautiful. Many options, colors.
Yeah, also because we are on Great Greeks, we'll say that we have several Greek-inspired patterns, and we're about to unveil quite a few more, actually, in the next few weeks. So I believe by the time this is released, or maybe shortly thereafter, we should have a number of more Greek-themed Greek-themed pocket squares, rather.
Right.
And the reason is because, especially when you're a startup and you're a new business, you have to know your audience, right? Mm-hmm. And for myself and this startup is, how do you get word out initially? You get word out through word of mouth, friends, family, and then they tell their friends and family.
Yeah.
And the people that you're going to first reach out to is your community. So I've been very fortunate that many fellow Greeks have backed me up and supported the brand, supported the business. Mm-hmm. So because we have so many Greek customers, we like to in turn provide patterns that we're pretty sure they're going to like. So that's why we have a lot of Greek-themed patterns.
I know that there are a lot of people that listen to our podcast who are of a business mindset. And some of them do have questions, for example, like, how important is social media? How do I outsource that sort of thing? How do you see that platform and how important it is to your business?
Yeah, I mean, in this day and age, it's a necessity. So one of the things that is I'm being very laser focused on in 2023 is pre-planning ahead of time for content. A lot of times, you know, it was like, oh, when I was inspired, or when we got a customer sending a picture. But what I've noticed is the more consistent we are in posting, the more business we get. It's just that equals that. And there's no way around that. And the more we post, the more business we get. So if you're in the business of wanting to make money and, you know, grow your business and grow sales, then you got to post really every day. And, you know, you can say 6 days a week, fine, but the people don't see anything behind the scenes. Yeah, they just know what you show. Yeah. They just know what you show them. So they don't know, you know, I'm meeting with my manufacturer, or I'm having Zoom calls, or I'm working with designers. No one sees that. They just see
Anthony's what, just going around having coffees in Astoria. It's happening by itself, this business, obviously, you know.
Totally, 100%. Yeah. So the more you let people in, the more invested they are, and they may not be ready to make a purchase decision right then and there.
Mm.
But when people feel invested in you, they'll feel invested in your company. So I launched Rare Cut on Kickstarter in, this is my pandemic baby. I launched September of 2020, which is a wild time to launch anything, let alone a fashion accessories company. But I had the release on ice and I was like, you know what? I want to do it. I was waiting for what felt like an appropriate time. And as we were kind of learning what COVID was and, you know, pandemic, the craziness was kind of coming down a bit, I said, you know what? Now is the time. Let's roll with this. Let's launch. And in 30 days, so a 30-day campaign, we did over $50,000 in sales for a fashion accessories company where no one was getting dressed, including me, the founder, who was wearing sweats because we couldn't go anywhere, you know, we're on lockdown. Yeah, I was like, you know what? This is a proof of concept right here. We're onto something. And I got to say, I attribute it to sharing the journey. So because I shared the journey and I constantly posted and I asked people their opinions and I said, hey, here we are. We're at we're in the garment district and we're picking out fabrics and here's what I'm going through and here's what my day looks like. And I'd ask opinions like, which pattern do you like more? That got people engaged and caring about the company. So when I was ready to roll and launch the company, people were like, oh, you know what? The time is now. Like, he's launching. Let me support. And I had so many people that I'm blessed to say came and supported me and the brand. And it's really because of letting people in and them getting that sneak peek before we went live.
Right.
I always say, Leah, it's like seeing a band on a small stage at a small club, and then all of a sudden they're headlining Coachella or Bonnaroo. You're going to feel like, I knew that band when they played a small club, and you're going to feel invested in that band. You know what I'm saying? Because you were there. You were there from the beginning. Yeah. So same with a business. You know, if you show people the ins and outs and the daily grind of your business, they're going to feel invested in you, and they're going to support, and they're going to be lifelong fans of yours.
That's so good. Can we call them rare cut groupies yet, or is that a bit much? Maybe not that.
Yeah, sure. We'll go. Well, listen, we're tongue in cheek here. Our tagline is "It stays up," so there's nothing off limits.
That's so cool. That's fast. It's really heartwarming to hear that the Greek community and others in the community as well supported you in that infancy stage of your business.
Yes.
But, you know, I have heard also stories of people where they are persuaded not to begin their idea because they hear X or Y say, oh, I don't think it's a good idea, or you shouldn't do it. There's always those people around. But to hear this story, it's heartwarming and I imagine inspiring to our listeners, because there are so many out there that want to start something and they're always second guessing themselves. So here's a story, guys. You know, it's what they say in Field of Dreams, if you build it, he will come. It's that sort of situation. Just go for it, do it, and you'll see people support it. And actually, Vanessa Arjondido, who we had on our show a few episodes ago, she climbed the Seven Summits and Mount Everest.
Wow.
And she said, I had the idea to climb the Seven Summits. I was telling my friends and they were saying, oh, why are you doing this? It's not a good idea. And what she did is she just went for it because her dream was so strong. And she noticed when she had made the decision to do it, those same people actually were on board and supporting her.
Always.
People are attracted to that courage, I guess, and that all that sort of stuff. But it's awesome. It's awesome to hear that story. With the social media stuff, it sounds like it takes a lot of time, but is it something that you do, or do you outsource it?
Currently, I'm doing it. I am looking to get a little help on that end.
Because I've got the same question for myself, really, with the podcast, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what you're seeing, too, is the tremendous growth in TikTok as well. So I'll say this. Like, we oftentimes, I mean, we get great sales through our Instagram and our TikTok, and our following isn't gigantic, but we have a loyal fan base. We really do. And our engagement is high. Mm. And that's what counts. Like, sometimes you see someone has like tens and tens of thousands of followers, but there's no engagement. There's only a few likes, only a couple of comments. We really have, our fans are awesome. I really gotta say, our customers are fantastic. And one thing to keep in mind too is with not just your brand that is your product or your service, but also your personal brand. You know, we sell just as much product through my personal postings as we do on Rare Cut, because it's a reflection of my company. You know, that's a part of me. So that, I'd say we get just as many customers through my own personal social as we do on the company social.
Any other endeavors you've got, business endeavors that you can tell us about? Nothing that we don't want you to tell us anything that we could potentially steal from you, but any interesting things coming on the horizon, sort of thing, generally speaking?
I like to work. And I don't, you look at it as like quote unquote work. I like to keep busy. I like to, my job is so medical device sales. So it entails meeting people and offering solutions. And I don't view as myself as a quote unquote salesperson. Like some people like, hey, I can sell ice to an Eskimo. That's not how I am. When I'm enthusiastic about something, you know it. So that is, and we have a great device for medical, and my product is great as well. So that is what I hope people get from me when I speak about the things that I'm involved with, my endeavors. With Rare Cut, we're going in a few different directions and good directions. Mm-hmm. I never started Rare Cut to be a company with a product. I started Rare Cut to be a brand with a solution to a problem, with a purpose. I wanted to have a brand with a purpose. Mm-hmm. And anything that's, I want to live a purpose-driven life. That's the point of living a successful life, in my opinion. Yeah. And that's also the point in having a business, or else why do it? So for me, we have done certain things that are near and dear to my heart. So in the past, we've done during the pandemic. We had a shop local campaign where we had a really, really cool pattern, Greek inspired, but a really cool pattern. And we asked entrepreneurs or business owners, how do you stay up? Because, you know, it stays up. How do you stay up during these tough times? And we featured entrepreneurs wearing the shop local pocket square and featuring their story in our social. And we got such high engagement. People were like, I love that content. It's real. It tells a story. And that's what I'm, you know, that's part of what we do. We are, you know, they say facts tell, stories sell. But people are invested into stories. People care about stories, not just a picture of a product box. That doesn't do anything for anyone. So we did that. We also did a campaign for breast cancer awareness. And I should also say, with these campaigns, we put our money where our mouth is. We give a portion of the proceeds to foundations that are in alignment with these different promotions that we do. We did one for Movember, and we actually just recently had a conversation. So we're going to be teaming up with the American Cancer Society, working with a couple of patterns, sharing stories of people who've gone through their, you know, their journeys, and featuring them, having a having pocket square patterns that go to those foundations as well. So that's what I talk about with higher purpose and things we're looking to do. And we're also going to be doing things that it's too soon to say yet, but we're going to be doing something pretty big, unveiling at some point, in regards to Greece and Greek history, which I cannot wait to share with you when we get there. Yeah. And that's the purpose, kind of tying everything together.
Yes.
That is what gives me the juice to not just run the company, but give my whole heart and soul into the company. Because again, it's not just a company with a product, it's a brand with a purpose. And that is what gives me motivation and keeps me at it during even the tough days and makes the great days even better.
Well, the sky's the limit, Anthony. And from what I'm hearing, it sounds like, you know, with your work ethic and your entrepreneurial skills, I have no doubt that you will do amazing things. I didn't realize, I never even considered that your product and your business could go into all those different areas. It's fascinating to hear. And it's awesome that you're doing that with the fundraising and just all the... being able to use your product for all those good causes and being able to keep it as flexible and as open as you—it's just fascinating to hear that it has all these options.
Yes, thank you, Leah. And one thing I should say too, to anyone that's out there that either has a business or is thinking about starting a business, in this day and age, anything could be a hybrid. You can have two things that have nothing to do with one another and find a way to pair it. You know, you just have to get creative. Like, what do pocket squares and, you know, the breast cancer awareness necessarily have to do with one another? One might say nothing, but you know what? We found a way to say, hey, let's take what we do, find a cause that we care about that's near and dear to our hearts, and feature people going through this journey and share their stories. Again, on the surface, you would think these two have nothing to do with one another, but it's your responsibility as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, to find ways to not just give back, but also get creative in bringing in things that you care about. Because when it's something, when you're pairing it with something you care about, people will sense, okay, this is genuine. This comes from a good place.
Yeah.
And they'll be more invested into your campaign, the cause, and they'll back up that foundation and your company all together because it's coming from a good place. So that's my recommendation to people is if there's something you care about, find a way to combine it. If you get creative, you'll be able to.
And creating that emotional connection like you're doing, that's so awesome.
Thank you.
Yes, I don't know if you're aware of this particular segment, but it's called The Castaway. So there's two things we want to ask. You're on a deserted island and you get to have one Greek food with you and one Greek musician's work with you, discography with you. Who would it be?
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, that is such a good question. Love it. Okay. So obviously the third thing I bring on the island is a rare kind of pocket square.
That of course. Goes without saying. Of course.
But you got to look good when you're stranded on an island by yourself. So one Greek food, and listen, this answer might be a lot of people's answers for their own in their own families, but would it be my mom's pasticcio?
Oh, everyone says pasticcio.
It's the best. I mean, it's the best. Awesome. It's awesome. And you know, if I did a blind taste test, I could tell you which one is Mom's Pasticcio, versus store-bought, versus the Eleni's, versus anyone. I'm telling you, you know the Pepsi challenge? Yeah. The PepsiCo challenge? Give me the Pasticcio challenge. I am ready. I will do it.
That is awesome.
I will nail this. Oh, I promise you, okay. I will get it right every single time. I will not miss. So that, and I know we didn't say, I mean, yeah, Pasticcio without a doubt, man. Okay, that's, okay. But specifically mom's.
Okay, okay. What is it that's good about your mum's? I mean, like everyone says their mum's is the best, but what is it about your mum's that's so good? Is it the sauce, the bechamel sauce, or is it the mince? Yeah, what is it in there that you think is makes it so good?
I mean, listen, I can't, if I tell trade secrets.
Is your mom going to listen to this podcast? Yeah, true.
She might. No, yeah. I think it's the specific meat that she uses and how she marinates it. I think that has a lot to do with it.
So it's the flavor you love.
Yeah, I'd say okay, that. It's awesome. It's one of those things that always hits the spot. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's my happy food, if you will.
Lovely.
And artist catalog. So, you know, some people go really deep on the catalog and they'll say someone from like the 50s, 60s. And and don't get me wrong, I love my old school Greek music. I do. But I got to go with Pandelidis because that voice still, I still hear it and it's still,
it's emotional, it's isn't touching. It? It's a painful voice. I think it's a painful voice. That's what I hear when I hear his voice, especially with what happened to him.
Yeah. And you hear, you know, that's right. Cause you almost now you like process the music a little bit differently that he's no longer with us. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I know my papu, obviously when he was around, he was, you know, old school guy, listens to like, you know, really old school music, you know, from back in the day. And I remember being in the car with him and we're playing like the, you know, the tunes that he likes, like real old stuff. And I happened to play a Pandelidis song. And I remember my papu was like really like into it. And talking at the time, my papu was what, 93 at the time when I think he said it? He's like off listening to Levendis. And he was just saying like how much he loved his voice. And I'm like, yeah. It really was, especially for someone that, you know, likes certain things, that eats the same meal all the time. You know what I mean? Like, everything is very regimented. To bring a brand new artist and still for someone that was 93 years old to feel the feelings from that song. I mean, that if that's not a stamp of approval of Pandelidis, I don't know what is.
Yeah. And I think Pandelidis started from YouTube, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Which is another interesting story in itself. I had actually arrived to Greece on the day that he had the car crash. So I'll never forget that day because I had just arrived in Greece. I had just landed.
Yeah, that one still stings.
It does. Yeah, it does. I'll do a little bit of another little game before we let you go, if that's right, Anthony.
Of course.
So basically, it starts off with your first memory.
Oh, wow. I actually do. My first memory, I was probably just turned 3 years old, and I was sitting on my yaya's lap outside of my papu yaya's house in Astoria on the front of that street that I mentioned earlier, actually. And as I was sitting on her lap, she was feeding me cherries and taking out the pits.
Your favorite subject at school?
My favorite subject in school, in college, was anything business related. When it came to, anytime there was a subject that had to do with something I was interested in, I got excellent grades.
Tzatziki or tarama?
Tzatziki.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think most people would say that. What are you afraid of?
Not living to my full potential.
Mm-hmm. Your biggest strength?
My biggest strength is, my positivity.
Advice to 10-year-old Anthony.
Advice to 10-year-old Anthony is, that's a great question. To always follow your heart, and there's going to be a lot of naysayers and people telling you what they expect of you and out of your life, but in the end, you know where you need to get to and keep focused on whatever that prize is and don't take your eye off the ball, as we say here. But you know the truth and you got to follow your heart. And if you follow your heart and live the life of your dreams, you're going to have a great life. If you live the life of others' expectations and what they want, you're going to feel a void.
One country you would like to live in other than the USA and Greece, let's say.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you said in Greece, because that's going to be everyone's go-to answer, of course.
Yeah, great.
Okay, I would. All right, I'm going to give a two answers on this. Okay. If I had to live temporarily somewhere, and I mean for like 6 months to a year, I would go to Thailand. That was the best vacation I've ever been on, minus Greece. Yes. But Thailand was incredible. And I lived like a king for like $40 a day. It was incredible.
Wow.
But a place I would live, I could see myself, you know, if I had to, somewhere else, Spain. Spain, specifically Madrid, is a magical city.
And what does being Greek mean to you? Final question.
Okay, being Greek means to me a lot of things. So as Greeks, we have a rich history that we can always reference and tap into, which not every culture can do. So just knowing that our roots stem from the bedrock of modern civilization and having had so many of our ancestors who altered the course of history, you carry that with you to a degree. And for me, I feel like it gives me a certain responsibility to do more. And it gives me inspiration that I can do anything that I put my mind to.
Yeah.
So Greeks are innovators. We've been at the forefront of change. And Greeks have changed the world. And that doesn't stop now. Because if anything, we should pride ourselves on continuing to carry that torch and pass that torch to the next generation.
Well said. Agree completely. And that's one of the reasons, you know, the podcast was started, just to showcase the reality that there are Greeks out there with the spirit of those Greeks that we know from the past that we look to for a source of inspiration. It's just that it's not advertised as much. So one of the things, you know, the podcast is trying to do is make it clear that there are Greeks out there who are grinding, who are succeeding, who are working. Maybe you can as well, whoever you are. And hopefully that's happening, you know.
If I could add in too, because it ties into kind of what I had just mentioned, what you're doing is a beautiful thing, because I think there, at least in America, there was always this kind of stigma amongst Greeks that Greeks don't support one another. And I heard that a lot growing up, but I got to tell you, in my personal experience, that has not been the case. Are there some people who are unsupportive? Sure. You're going to get that from all types of different people. I do have to say, though, I really attribute a lot of my success and the position that I'm in life, and really the man who I am today, is because of other Greeks who have had my back and boosted me up and given me a chance, given me an opportunity. So while I do understand that the stigma exists, there are outlets and things like this podcast that you're doing that give people an avenue to showcase their talents, to learn from one another and to work together. So you just have to find it. I think a lot of people look for the negative and then will stay fixated on that. But if you open up your eyes, do a little research, you'll find things like this, like the Great Greeks podcast, which encourages and promotes people within the culture to follow their dreams and follow their hearts. And that's so important. So I want to thank you for what you're doing. And this is really a beautiful thing.
Thank you so much, Anthony. I appreciate that. All feedback is welcome, especially the stuff that's positive towards the podcast. But all feedback is welcome, of course.
Of course.
I really appreciate it. You know, look, I mean, it's a labor of love at the moment, to be perfectly honest. It's a passion project. You know, it's beautiful to speak with people like yourself and the guests we've had on. It's beautiful to receive those messages, just like with you, with your business. Those messages from people that are listening in to tell us what they liked about something, how they found one of the episodes inspiring. I mean, that is payment in itself, really. Example is one of the greatest sources of, you know, motivation, I find. So that's what we're doing. Thank you so much, my friend. Thank you for being on board today. Really appreciate it. Perhaps you can just tell us one last time, you know, where we can purchase your products from, where we can find you if we want to reach out to you specifically and talk to the person behind the product as well and the brand, social media handles and accounts and all that sort of stuff.
Absolutely. So first and foremost, again, Ilya, this was such a pleasure. Thank you for having me on as a guest and thank you for doing what you do. If you guys want to support the brand, support the company, the website is rarecut.com. And on all social handles, we're fortunate to have the same social handle. So it's at rarecut. Pretty much across the board. And if you want to get in touch with me personally, it's at Anthony Orisis. spelt O-R-I-S-S-E-S, all S like Sam, or all S like Stavros, we'll say, for our audience here.
Perfect. Awesome. Thanks very much. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Really appreciate it. And tune in again next week for another episode of the Great Greeks Podcast. Thanks, everyone.